strength I don't know how to play. And I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked. Zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my
Hello and welcome to the 27th episode of the National Institute for Gamer Review. I am DK.
I'm Lewis, and we just couldn't kind of run past this game and skip this part and skip it. You know, it was too, too in front of us. You kind of have to engage with it. You really can't just sneak around it or past it.
Indeed, and there's yes, that's today we're talking about Elden Ring, of course, which. Many of you have been asking us to discuss in some way, and I, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, I mean, I think it's,
and this is also very much like part one.
Yes.
First impressions.
Yes.
People have asked to be on the next episode. We're still thinking of you, but this is just our quick, like, for this, to get our, you know, what, first 10 hours, probably, you'd say.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like 6 to 10. I don't know
how I checked Steam. I guess it's a little bit. Yeah, 8.8 hours. 8.8 hours. There you go. That's the magic.
But yeah. So for our listener who asked to be on the big episode, yes, you're still on for the final episode.
But
this is like our first.
Well, the bigger point being, of course, that the game is obviously massive enough and enough of a kind of cultural event. It clearly is resonating with the industry and the game playing public. I can't really remember the last time anything like it happened, really.
And yeah, it's kind of transcended the whole like community thing, where like games are big in their own sphere of Twitter or subreddit or whatever.
Someone I know who's like a big Switch guy. He's like, you know, kind of an overgrown adult in certain ways, but he really likes the, you know, Breath of the Wild and doesn't play that many video games. Was telling me that he was enjoying Elden Ring and kind of wished it was a little more, you know, do anything like Breath of the Wild, but was still, so that's, I mean, it's reaching into kind of just lots of different areas, and I that kind of speaks, I think, to my thesis at whatever 8.8 hours in, which is that it's Dark Souls for people who didn't play Dark Souls for whatever reason.
Which is I didn't really play Dark Souls.
I've been thinking for a while that we needed to do a Dark Souls episode, and we still might. I would definitely want to replay it before doing so. But part of that too is while I did play, I played it only once, but I savored the experience. But I also did the whole spreadsheet thing, which is the wrong way to play. As I'm quickly discovering with this, and I'm finally chilled out, and it's much more enjoyable. Dark Souls is, you know, I don't know. I think there's enough going. There's enough similarity. Obviously, it's a From Software game. We all kind of know the formula, or at least now people do. And it's not only just that the games are similar enough at a mechanical or even aesthetic level. It's that there are shot for shot, beat for beat. I forget the musical term, but repetitions of the
homage kind of thing, like a.
No, I said there's a particular term for like a repeated
motif?
Group of
motif.
No, music theory. Spurgs will will know what I'm talking about.
Sure,
doesn't matter.
It's not motif.
Motif is like leitmotif is like basically a sequence of sounds or you know whatever that's associated with a particular character or place. So there are. There's stuff like that, as you know, we kind of all there's a sonic repertoire that we're all familiar with from epics and movies and stuff and epic movies, but in any case, no, it's like the big one that comes to mind, which there were bits and pieces here, and there was the Bloodborne bridge for a second, and like definitely like kind of small, may even be more homages, but the big thing which I which was just very clearly deliberate, was after the kind of capstone first pass, the boss, like the first real difficulty spike and test of your abilities, Margit, who's this hulking dude, immediately after you beat him, you're ascending up this castle, and there's a rest area. It's I don't know who's playing. I don't know who's listening to this who has never played either this game or a Souls game. But basically, the idea, the kind of one of the core things of the mechanical structure is there. You go from safe space to safe space, and inside the safe space, you can rest and heal up and get all your basically your health potions. You get a certain number of charges, and those are replenished. However, all the enemies in the area reset, and so that's the kind of the beat. And so you're always the kind of general one of the at a mechanical level things that the series is always playing with. Is this sense of I have made a certain amount of progress, I'm exploring a new area, I'm trying to get to the either to the next thing, which is typically this next safe space, and so you're always kind of like lost and afraid and very vulnerable and looking to get, so when you beat a boss, especially after a sequence of these increasing difficulty area encounters, you beat this boss, it's like, okay, now I've passed this certain kind of test, the first real test, and now I see this safe space, and it's to the right of this castle, very kind of iconic. It's a shot from Dark Souls. It's where the fire dragon was, and it's who fulfilled a similar kind of function in certain ways. I think the designer is very deliberately, very intentionally piecing together elements of his previous work to what particular kind of an aim, I can't say yet. I did notice that even the structure of the first cutscene, which probably wouldn't necessarily register too much. Like, I remember the first time I saw the opening cutscene of Dark Souls, I was like, okay, this is a bunch of, I don't know what the fuck any of this is. And of course, eventually you learn bits and pieces about, some of it put together. But in terms of the structure, where there's like a description of an event that's just very murky, but it's really important, and then you go through like four big important figures that are kind of associated with the aftermath of that presumably you're going
I have a take on this world and
I just want to finish real quick absolutely talk about the lore specifically, but my point here is the Dark Souls does the exact same thing. It's literally like the setup and then the go through and this person, that thing, and the Seath the Scaleless Dragon is, and of course in Dark Souls and whatever and then the horror, we could talk about the horror in a second. And the whole thing of, I think part of what's going on is an incel thing, but before we get to that, I do want to hear what you have to say about the world and the lore generally.
So the world is, and I didn't really ever get too deep into the Dark Souls games to get a true feel for them. But this world feels, there's two things going on. One is that it's very deliberately a kind of, I guess you would say, like, I'm trying to think of what I say isn't super nerdy and accessible, but like, it's set in like the Lord of the Rings world, but like Gandalf lost in the summer, like, the good guys in the beginning at some point lost, like the Kali Yuga or post Kali Yuga.
That's the kind of vibe, but that's not, I see what you're saying. Yeah, in that sense, but it's not clear that there are good guys per se, which I think is, this is a constant theme of his.
It's a fallen world, right, or whatever, yeah. And it borrows very aggressively and, like, shamelessly in a way that I kind of appreciate. There's just some straight berserk pulls. When I first, because I was doing the character selector, looking through, like, the classes and stuff, and the warrior class and the prisoner class are just shameless berserk references, like just like the sample model they give you with his helmets, and the one is so the prisoner class is what's his name, Garrett, how am I blanking on this, but yeah, the warrior class is Guts, and what's the
Griffith, you mean Griffith.
Yeah the prisoner class is Griffith, after he gets taken from like after he gets liberated from the prison with the big helmet on and he's all fucked up. Like they're both like very deliberate Berserk references that are.
Well, those as I recall, like, the prison archetype had been there in previous games too, though. Not to say that it's not
the character model. I mean,
yeah, of course,
the shameless.
And that was one of the things I noticed too, was that the archetypes themselves are recycled, and he's, I think, deliberately playing on this thing of the audience. He's deliberately responding to the audience's expectations in that if you have played Dark Souls, you're interacting with it at some point at a level of like familiarity with the archetypes and what it will mean for the playing the game. But then it's also, I don't know, maybe we're overthinking it, because
if you played Ghost of Tsushima, you could play the samurai class.
But you could say the same thing about like Gauntlet, right? I mean, it's at a certain point, it's
I think, I don't want to get too negative on it. Like, I don't mean this in a bad way, but like, it's kind of like the Avengers of these kind of games.
Yeah. Well, like the samurai doesn't belong, and he's immediately stuck out to me as like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
It's Ghost of Tsushima. Well, you're doing Ghost of Tsushima. It's the Ghost of Tsushima. If you liked Ghost of Tsushima,
I actually never never played Ghost of Tsushima, but I'm sure I know that I would.
My brother got big into it. That's one for, I actually never played either.
So you're saying you don't have to sneak by the you can just like brute force it? That strikes me as really dumb. But I don't. We could get into that, I guess.
Wait, what? What
do
you think?
No, with the encounter with the stinger you were referencing, like the game. I at least my thesis, but maybe that's in large part derived from my experience of playing as the samurai class, is the game is pretty explicit about don't.
Oh, no, I didn't play samurai. I played warrior because I like knights.
Okay. All right,
that was my
gotcha.
I was pretty grug.
How did it go?
You can still pretty much sneak. I'm playing like a heavy-ish class. But yeah, I can still sneak and do like backstabs and stuff like that. I don't feel like I can sneak as well as a sneaky class could, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like I don't think I'm getting spotted out earlier than anyone else. And I'm in like heavy ass armor too. I think the stealth is just there. If that makes sense. Like I don't think it's a class restriction on stealth.
Oh no, I mean, first of all, he's medium encumbered and quite heavily armed and armored. It's not maybe I should rephrase, because I certainly understand that heavy play is there and you know can be from the beginning, but I think I'm thinking about this also to some extent from like a new player's perspective, and I can think of how a new player would perhaps just want to go and beat up all the dudes, and it's just not going to work. But maybe, yeah, did you go and beat up all the dudes and it worked?
I mean, I think my default is that I go in trying to fight, because I'm trying to grind XP, right? Like and level my.
But that's
up.
Exactly my point. Is you don't have to do that to grind XP. That's part of like that's kind of where I'm going with this. But go on.
So, but like, there are certain enemies that are, I recognize, like, oh, this is the guy's too tough to take out right now. There's a pretty good moment where, like, if you're, as soon as they pop out in the open world, like, you could fuck up and, like, end up, like, oh, there's a big ass dragon in the swamp. And I just hauled ass. I was like, there's no way.
Yeah, you know, right. That's not going to go my way. Yeah.
And even that first guardian guy is, I, like, went out and just did, like, a little, I don't know, side quests or. Grind, and then I came back. I could handle him a lot better. Like the guy, the first Guardian of Spirit, or whatever. He's like he's not a full boss, but you kind of by the church, like the first boss in the open world, I guess, who sees you.
I'm not sure that I fought him. I don't remember. Yeah.
And I do have some, like, you know, mimetic exposure to the game, where I don't fight every enemy immediately. I like walk up to them and see if they're hostile, because I know some aren't. Like, I don't, but, the ones I mainly sneak around are those, the heavily armored knights that you meet.
Yes, those, especially, those will fuck you up.
They're not bosses, and they're not bosses, they'll just
But they're almost like mini bosses, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At least at this stage of the game, they're kind of like Taurus demons, I guess, in, Dark Souls.
The game
but,
does give you tools, like, if you have the summoning, wolves, right?
Yeah, although I haven't been. That was one of my pretty much my only substantial critique of the game at this point is that, or criticism, I should say, is that. Okay, I understand that there's a value in having players figure things out for themselves. But I had to literally look online to learn how to learn that it was L2 for special attack. Like I didn't see that explained anywhere, or maybe I just missed it on the controller screen. But the help, like, I'm trying to play this as hands off the internet as possible. Like, I'm not looking anything up. I'm gonna see what I experience just purely on the basis of doing, just kind of almost even role playing a bit at a certain level.
I've started that way as well, where I play like I'm trying to do minimum input from the internet. But like, as someone who has like I have a burner Twitter account, and because of like Amazon and Twitter control, you know, listening to your phone, and now I'm getting recommended Elden Ring tweets and stuff, which is fine. I follow video games. I'm not too conspiratorial about it. And it is amazing how much you miss and need to be enlightened with. Like the map's not brown. The map is a fully, like, you define the map pieces to see the parts of the map.
Right.
But also, like, the parts of the map are indicated on the brown map. I just didn't even look for them. But like, the where the map is in that area.
Oh no, I fully intend to take my time. We initially discussed, we were joking around, like, this is gonna be games journalist mode, and we could maybe do that to some extent, but
yeah.
I'm in no hurry. I honestly, like, I think this is much like Dark Souls, and to maybe a slightly lesser extent Bloodborne, something worth kind of piecing together. I don't know. That's my intended approach is I'm, because I think part of the anxiety that I had with Dark Souls and what led me to do that, part of it was a min-max thing, and I don't want to, like, suck at combat because I spec'd wrong or something. But and as I recall, Dark Souls didn't, I don't think they had any respec, like, at all or something like that. It was really, really onerous, if not impossible. But Elden Ring is not like that. It's clearly much more, and with both you can use the, you know, the item descriptions and the little bits and pieces of dialogue. That's another very interesting thing that he does, is he doesn't repeat dialogue for the most part. It's sometimes you'll get the, you know, sigh, times are tough on a loop at the end of a conversation, but it's always worth having the first conversation, and you got to pay attention because they're not just going to say the same thing over and over again. And in fact, it's worth talking to the same people multiple times. I learned this lesson in part the hard way from, like, realizing that I screwed up with Dark Souls, you know, midway, like, not midway through, but kind of early-ish on, when I realized that I was just kind of ignoring stuff, and I was looking for certain I wanted the best ending or whatever, and I'm like, well, what the fuck does that even mean? Especially, and as you put it, you know, Lord of the Rings, Middle Earth, where Gandalf lost. It's like, who are the, you know, are, you know, what's a good guy? I think clearly. I mean, he's been what's it? I forget the designer's name. I blank on the. It doesn't really matter, I guess. I'm sure he'd prefer it that way. He's long been on this kick about, like, defeat and dissolution and entropy, right? And the part of that is also his, you know, musings. I'm stealing this. I don't remember who was on post, but he's talking about, you know, he's disappointed in the absence of Sky Daddy God that he doesn't quite understand to begin with. And I think that's definitely true. And we see there's echoes of that in the lore already.
I was actually, I realized what I forgot initially was that, remember that before the heavy knights and how you can counter them? Like, if you the summoning wolf, like, if you've been, like, summoning the wolves a lot, the lone wolf.
I couldn't figure out how to summon the wolves for the longest time.
Wait, really?
I had to look it up.
Well, it's annoying. You have to equip everything.
The UI is a mess. Like, whoever, Kotaku journalists or whatever the fuck, they were totally right. The UI is a mess.
No, it's not that bad. I figured that out myself. I didn't. You should have to equip things.
I had enough game sense to know that I had to equip it somewhere. I didn't know where or how, and their game gave me nothing to help me do that.
Yeah, but the only thing that is opaque to me still, and don't comment it, is I don't know how you after you use the wolves, it seems like arbitrarily you just get them back. I don't know if it's on a timer or whatever, because they're unlimited use. Like, you just get them back. But sometimes
it's ashes. There's like, I guess there's, for some reason there's ashes around. There's ashes.
But where are the ashes around? Like
yeah, exactly.
I don't pick up ashes. I just end up like, oh, cool, wolves are back. And they usually,
well, there's a little icon, right? There's that little tombstone icon. It's like, okay, now you can summon some dudes to help.
Yeah. Do you have anything other than wolves yet? I only have the wolves.
I got a jellyfish. I don't know how.
Yeah, but I find the I don't know. I know in Ghost of Tsushima you could there were like friendly samurai, and it seems, but other than like, you know, other players, it seems like there's a lot of like helping characters in this game. Like there's people you can summon in to help you that really make things significantly easier, because the bosses are clearly designed about being hard for one entity. And when you pop down these, like, you know,
Margit in particular. At least I haven't got to a similarly difficult boss yet.
I'm at a side boss, and it's one of those bosses with a bunch of it's not particularly difficult in its own pattern. It's not easy, but it's not like that, not like Margit level hard. But it comes in with like 5 high DPS and low health enemies. As soon as you walk in the room, they just swarm you.
That was the most notorious encounter in Dark Souls, and the one that I had the most difficulty with was, I don't remember the, it was some kind of dogs, high DPS little dogs with like,
I
haven't even hit it yet, and that's a dark, yeah,
it's a side boss. I think it's a side boss too. It's like a,
interestingly, I don't recall any encounter like that in Bloodborne. I didn't play Sekiro. Haven't played it yet, I should say. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. It's like he's clearly, you know, encounters, areas, art, lore, concepts are all, and in some cases, pretty much, I'm pretty willing to bet literal maps, and are being repurposed and reused in a kind of bricolage into this thing.
I think this is like, I don't want to say like magnum opus, because I don't think it's the last of these kind of this kind of FromSoft game.
It feels that it's going to, in retrospect, have been his magnum opus. I agree.
Yeah, but I think the goal is to, and I mean this in a positive like marketing sense, that this will be the Avengers of this kind of game, and they will stop being. The goal is that this game is big and good, and that it won't be. They won't be cult. They've all been like very good cult classics, I think. And this makes this game is designed to push this kind of FromSoft game into the true, like, AAA, like, 10 million copies, you know, first month space. I think they're pulling out all the stops.
Oh, you mean like they want to make it the next Assassin's Creed? They could try, but I don't see how you could.
I think that's what it is. They're pulling out all the stops to get just, like, the Dark Souls has been, like, is, like, an insular fan base, right? Like, I'm a Dark Souls. You know, I play Dark Souls. I've done, you know, 25 runs of Dark Souls 3, right? Yeah. Like, that's a kind of guy, right? And they're cool guys. They're really good at Dark Souls.
I don't think he would mind Storm King, our old friend, and shout out to you. I don't know if you're, but yeah, Storm King was doing that with Demon Souls. Like, he goes all the way back there, and he's done it with every release since.
And I think, I'm sure he's doing it with this one too, but.
Which is just to say, he's one of the coolest guys, maybe the single coolest guy I know.
And but this thing is, I think, designed and is pushed in a way, I think, also in terms of marketing, that it's they're not saying it's easy, but they're saying you don't have to be one of those guys to play it. And I think they're trying to broaden the market, and they're pulling out all the stops in terms of, but I think they are staying true to the spirit of the thing. But,
oh yeah, well, this is definitely, I don't feel pandered to at all. I did want to talk about maps in a second, or, you know, later on, but
my point is, I think future games in this from FromSoft will sell 10 million plus in the first month now.
I hope so. Good for them if they do. If they're at this level of quality, they deserve to. I mean, you know.
And if they come up with every 4 years or 3 years, they should.
That's totally sustainable. Yeah, Assassin's Creed yearly release was just not, but this is way more sustainable and much more cerebral of an experience in all sorts of ways, and
unforgivably Japanese.
Yeah, which is fun.
Oh, speaking of, I know I'm cutting you off a little bit, but you remember last episode we brought up the Zelda's increasing self-confidence in Japanese.
Yes.
I've noticed that obviously this game is like a Lord of the Rings thing, and outside of the Berserk stuff, which is obviously pretty Japanese, I've noticed that the... So when you, like, summon things in, like the wolves, there's, like, a little ding sound, which would be, like, a fairy bell or a church bell or a kind of a Western music ding. It's the Buddhist or Japanese bell. It's, which is, you know what I'm talking about? It's a different kind of
tone. Yeah, of course. Tone.
And that's a, and I feel like it's kind of out of place in the fantasy Western, you know, Fallen Lord of the Rings setting. But I think it's an example of, like, increasing self-confidence in Japanese culture that...
Yeah, it's like the designs on Link's shield, going from a straight up Crusader cross to essentially Shinto type, patterns and imagery. Then, that's which is fine. I mean, I don't know. I kind of wanted to, when I saw the samurai, I was like, this is a little bit out of place, but you know, I'm playing with the theme back, and he put it there.
I think it is like it's the Sekiro thing. I think he's doing it because of Sekiro, so people like that game a whole lot.
Sure. Yeah.
But also, it does feel weird that it's samurai and not like Ronin or some kind of.
Well, monk. But it's also kind of like, okay, so I reached a point where I was maybe 4 or 5 hours in, and I had acquired the mooks, the bad mooks in the starting area drop an armor that on paper has greater physical resistance than your starting samurai armor. So I was like, fuck it, I'll have a little extra physical resistance. I don't really care. And, you know, at a certain level, Dark Souls armor, unless you're going really heavy, is kind of cosmetic. You know, people famously, you know, essentially use it to play dress up. And so I'm going along, and I'm in this nominally superior armor, but I just look like a generic Crusader Knight dude. And I'm like, I don't want that. And I'm like, no, for now, until I have some good reason to take off my samurai armor, like I'm a fucking samurai. But like at the same time, you know, I'm 1,000 runes on some Western sword, and an armor change away from like, and you can even, I mean, you know, change everything. It just doesn't, it's just kind of plastic, right? Which is of course also by design.
The helmet is the last piece of guts. Well, and this big sword, obviously, I'm helmet and big sword posting, but yeah, I've changed like the other aesthetics of guts.
Right. And, right. Yeah. Oh, your character is just guts now.
Yeah. I mean, I
you can name yourself. That was I was playing. Yeah, so I played. A, sorry, I did. You did.
I did.
Your guts.
Yeah.
Nice.
The guts helmet. And the guts.
Nice.
Sword. I call them guts. Like,
nice.
Go.
Very nice. Yeah. No, I was gonna say So I had my first cooperative multiplayer experience not long before recording, and it was really nice. We both bowed, and he was just he was angry man, and he had like these fists, these like iron fist type things, and he was shirtless, and he was running around real fast, faster than me, and I'm not slow. He was minimally encumbered and had these giant iron fists, and his name was Angry Man, and I was like, okay, people are getting into this. This is great. This is fucking awesome, actually.
Did you find the claws at the Wolverine?
Yeah, I found them. I immediately tried them on, and they didn't. My Uchi Katana is actually really. I sort of anticipated that he would do this thing of giving you a badass starting weapon that you could just upgrade and be fine with the whole game. I'm waiting for some kind of pike or halberd because I tend to like those. I haven't encountered one yet. I've seen some scythes; those can also be fun, but I haven't encountered that either. So in the meantime, sorry, what were you going to say?
This is interesting.
How so?
I start with a halberd and a sword. So I
see
I
now that's really halberd. That is really interesting.
But,
yeah, because
but it's super shitty. It's like it's super slow. Like it was unusable actually.
Sure.
Like maybe it's early game or people get better faster ones, but the warriors, everything we get or all the attacks are really deliberate. And I got the Wolverine claws, and they were dope. Because you can still have a shield. And one
they're fantastic. They're so cool. They look the animations are incredible.
And so then you start going into like heavier enemies, like those boss knights.
Well, that was the thing. Like exactly, I was when in the area where you discover them, the mooks are totally susceptible to it, and it feels so awesome to pound right into them. But you just need more DPS for the.
Also, you can double equip them too on both hands if you want.
Yes, of course. That was would you use them some other way?
Well, you can if you use with a shield, you can then block and do that.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be Wolverine.
Yeah, but it's Like, you don't lose actually. You actually don't lose that much speed.
I know that was the other thing about the katana, because I wanted to or whatever Uchi Katana. I wanted to. I love that, like the autism with the Japanese names. Like, there's a generation of Western games that would have just called it a katana and left it at that. But anyway, the two hand stance for now is not, because it would reap dividends in previous games. For now, it's kind of like I don't know. I always liked the pyromancer stuff in Dark Souls. I just kind of didn't really. I learned about it through spreadsheets in wikis too late for, and it was all just, it didn't really end up working out. But this time, I saw from the beginning that with like one or two levels, points, investment in faith, I think it was two, that I could then throw fireballs. I'm like, fuck yeah. And so now I have my fireball hand and my katana hand, and it's pretty great. I'm enjoying myself.
I noticed a lot. There wasn't too much. When I was fighting, I was trying to, Margit took me like a good hour and a half to beat, and I was trying, because you really can't.
Yeah, well, that's what it took. The Canis Demon, I think, was the name of the, or maybe that was the dog. I can't remember, but the that's how long it took me on Dark Souls.
But I got to experiment with all kind of stuff to try be fast, because you really can't block him, his attacks.
No, and he's got range on you too. It's a tough encounter.
So I try, and it actually ended up working, but like I was, so I got to try like no shield, two handed, and I mean, I was no shield, so just not equipping a shield, going two handed, and I didn't really notice too much of a difference in terms of speed or attacks. Like,
yeah,
it feels like double handing doesn't really give you too much of an advantage.
No,
maybe if I go back to halberds, I might notice.
That's the thing, is like with really long, really, or really big weapons, or both. I tend not to like hammer. I just find one big swing super telegraphed is not, it's not my thing, I guess. But with some of the faster, longer two-handed weapons, like it's at least in games prior, and that's sort of what I was, what I'm building in anticipation of. Although I do like my pyromancer hand.
I may have to try two-handed at halberd. I hadn't really thought about it. I bet it's
good. Give it a shot. Let me know what you find. And yeah, the weapons, it almost at a certain level becomes because it's an interesting kind of meta level thing that's responsive to the game industry of everybody expects. Oh, you play the game more and you get the better weapon. And I'm going to go around finding the plus one, the plus two, everybody from Baldur's Gate days or whatever and prior is acculturated to this idea of, I get better weapons over time. That can be true to an extent, but really, increasingly, and it was already true of Demon Souls practically, but even more so over time, it's become you get different moves. The weapons themselves, you essentially just upgrade with what you find, and
they're more of like weapons are like it's all about like it's almost like animations and like or speed, like how many frames
the weapon itself is kind of arbitrary.
And also, if you have and the ashes seem to matter almost more than the weapon. Like I use the stomp. Like, because it breaks the guard of enemies.
Well, you have a big heavy weapon to do that with. I use the impaling thrust.
Do you need? I think you could equip it to.
I'd have to double check the stomp. I'd have to double check.
Sword, yeah.
I would definitely sword. A guard breaking thing would be super helpful. But the impaling strike is I'm waiting to level up to the point where I just get so much alpha from an impaling strike. It's still from behind. It one shots most mooks, or one shot with a weak attack, which comes fast because it's a katana, right? And there's fast follow through. But something to break guard. I don't think you can have more than one at a time, which really sucks. So it's sort of like, what do you, what do you want to optimize around?
Yeah, I've seen some really bad ones too. Like I have some terrible. There's one that just makes your shield stronger.
But yeah, I think that comes. Yeah, that. Yeah, it's trash. It's just trash. Yeah, yeah. Most of it's gonna be trash. Whatever. But
I am interested to see if I ever find katanas as a warrior.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm sure I could equip them, whatever. But like I've found all the weapons I've found, because I'm playing at the Western or that one, I think it's the Warrior. I'm playing Guts. And I'm finding mostly gutsy style weapons. Like, I haven't found it. I don't have a bow. I have no.
Oh, I got a bow to start. Yeah, I got a bow to start. I really been using it much. But that's interesting.
I have a shitload of arrows, just from mooks picking them up. But I've managed. You can craft some range, like some throwing darts, but they're just utter trash. Like, I don't want to say it's. I think it's always been this way, but the consumable system doesn't play very well, nice with the grace system. You know, like if you
no, spend, not at all, not at all.
Craft,
yeah,
you craft a grenade, and you use it, and it's gone, and the material is precious.
Right,
but they're not that good. If they were like super awesome grenades that would like one shot, you know, tough enemies, it'd be something else. But
they're not even that good.
Yeah, taking a third of an enemy's health is like why am I even bothering? Also, right. I don't know if it's gonna work or not. Like, because I can't tell if this demon is affected by holy water or flame. Because
right.
everything looks evil and fucked up.
Right.
I've thrown a holy water at so many things that make sense for me that would damage it. Like, they do nothing. Oh, it's made of a rock monster, not a holy water. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, the consumable system is. I don't know if it's bad. It's just like survival horror.
Well, it cuts at cross purposes to the as you say, to the safe space system, because like yeah the expectation is you're gonna die a lot, or at least yeah well the expectation is that it's very dangerous, and you and especially like with a boss encounter, you know, you're just gonna have to keep at it and keep trying. Every other aspect of the design is oriented around the idea that you're just gonna keep trying and keep hammering at this problem, but then giving you just a very limited number of special ability, you know, it's like, I guess it becomes then a question of, okay, when situationally in this fight am I going to use this item? Or maybe it's more even more situational than that in terms of exploring new areas, but it just becomes so situational that it's really not worth developing the muscle memory to, like, you know, because then you have to dig it out of wherever even it is, and because you're not going to have enough to make it a really regular thing, and it's just... Yeah, as you say, kind of. I have autism to collect crafting materials, but I haven't crafted anything yet.
I've crafted a lot of these ranged things, and I've
That's what the pyromancer's for, man. That's what you got. I got a little fireball.
I played the wrong class, I guess. Whatever. Yeah. Well, so that's probably true. You know, I. But like, you see it as like 17 damage. You're like, why did I?
Sure. Yeah.
Why did I press this button? You know, I could have. I also just appreciate the aggressiveness of how long it takes to heal yourself and how easy it is to... The game is punishing in your two, like, traditional gamer muscle memory, because, like, I'll roll away and... But I'll, like, smash the hell out of the heal button and, like, end up burning all my charges. Have you done that yet? In a long fight? It's
I was muted. Yes, I have done that. Yes, and it's especially bad because I'm so used from just every other game to pressing X to attack or one of the side buttons, but typically, you know, one of those buttons at least on the you know, X, Y, A, B part of the pad, rather than especially R1. And yeah, in moments of just kind of like, I really need to be pressing attack, like right this second, the brain sends the signal to press X instead of R1, and then I, you know, try calling my steed that I can't because it's a boss fight or whatever.
Yeah. So here's another question of, like, so I think I told you this off before the show. I'm playing on a PS4 and or PS5, sorry. And I have been basically an Xbox gamer my entire life, since PS2. I then got a 360 and it's been on the Xbox train ever since. And my hands have, like, kind of, you know, hardened into that shape. And I'm getting pretty brutal fatigue playing both a PS, you know, PlayStation controller and a kind of unusual... button scheme. Like, it is a weird, like, you
it takes time to get used to it, even for people who, like, I've played probably at least, I would say, across From Software games, you know, not that this is nothing, but at least 100 hours, probably, maybe, you know, somewhere between 100 200, and it, unless I've like been recently playing a From Software game, it just takes time. It's weird.
Yeah, and I'm pressing trigger like harder and more often, it seems, like even than a shooter. Like a shooter, you're not like pounding on the attack button, you know, you're just like pulling trigger of gun. Whereas this one, you're like,
well, I've no, like, yeah, but the problem is, button. I actually quite like, I think they've really refined the button mashing doesn't, I still, for the first several hours, just because like muscle memory of fighter, you know, or whatever, third person, you know, Devil May Cry type, whatever you want to call them. You're used to spamming attack button, and to some extent that would even be true, especially with Bloodborne. I actually quite like Bloodborne, but one of the deliberate decisions there was to speed up the pace of combat and make and reward you for getting in enemies' faces quickly, which was like my most recent From Software experience. So I'm trying to mash on the attack button. It's like, no, this is definitely, this is like back a little bit more towards the Dark Souls end of things, where like we're giving you time, you know, the enemy, he's going to market telegraphs his attacks for a long time. If you just mash on dodge, like you'll roll 4 or 5 times and be out of stamina by the time he actually lands. And if you don't time it right, then you might just get hit anyway. So it's really more about the timing, which there's ample and paying attention to cues, rather than being more twitchy, which is also good. But yeah,
definitely. Although I will notice that, like, do you ever really? I've almost, unless it's like a sneak attack or some kind of very situational thing, I've almost never used a heavy attack.
Basically never. Yeah, only when I was wailing on Margit or similarly kind of big dudes.
Yeah, when somebody's like downed.
Yeah.
But I find it very rare that I'm ever using a heavy attack. And I'm also a lot of enemies, like an insane amount, have not that it's bad, like it's a good part of it. It's good, like where they have the very quick follow up attacks.
Yeah, that's also kind of new. They get attacks in sequence just like you do, which is good. It's like it's again I think adds to the cerebral nature of the experience.
The problem I think is that it makes blocking much. Like blocking is kind of useless, right?
Well, that's why I don't have a shield.
Yeah,
much more useful to have that fireball.
Yeah, it's dodging gets it's obviously always been the way to play these games, but it, you know, feels extremely important.
Well, Dark Souls was very, very like it wasn't optimal. Like it was ultimately the better you got, the less you needed your shield, but you could totally tank the game with a shield, and it was very, very really friendly to people who wanted to do that in a way that really Bloodborne was hostile to the extent that Dark Souls was friendly. I don't even think there really was. You had a parry in Bloodborne, but it was essentially an offensive parry and would require you to take damage, but it would heal you. So it was like the flow was built around getting healed by parries without a shield. Now he's giving you the shield. I didn't play Sekiro, so I can't comment on that. But now he's giving you your shield back, but still kind of discouraging its use, for sure.
Yeah. So the shield, it's not unusable. Like there's some enemies where it really comes in handy. Any kind of, if it's a slow enemy, it's like they're really, really useful, or a super fast enemy. But I've found that the parry, so there's one of like the special, I guess, you know, special moves that cost mana for fighters. One of the is that you can get a parry on one of the shields, and it's almost you can't use your special move, obviously, because you can't use your sword special move or your ash, whatever you call it. But the parry was like very, very hard to time. Like you have to have memorized like this particular mook's wind up and hit it at the perfect time to do it, which just isn't feasible because you don't fight the same mooks that often. There's so many mook types.
Yeah.
That I went with the stall. I had to eventually. You start with a parry, and it seemed like as a warrior, it wants you to get this parrying system because it parries. It's strong. I think it automatically breaks their poise and, like, you know, stumbles them or downs them, breaks their stance. But it's almost impossible.
Yes, that is more useful. Yes. That specific, like, because that
stomp breaks the stance half the time. If they're already kind of staggered or messed up, you can stomp and it'll break their stance.
Right.
But it goes off reliably. It's also good when you have buddies like the wolves, because the wolves.
Yeah,
are getting up.
I have to. I haven't actually successfully summoned them yet. I'll probably.
Oh, really? I use them constantly. I would be.
Oh, I would if I could, but you know.
I'm surprised. I couldn't have beat Margaret without it. Margaret was extremely difficult. Like without the wolves and the sorcerer.
And the other, yeah.
And of course the wolves tank for the sorcerer and me, which is great. You know?
Right.
And it's supposed to be an hour and a half.
Yeah, well, you know, but you know, now you have that experience under your belt, and that's I think ultimately one of the kind of I think coolest things about Miyazaki as a designer is he understands that what he is designing is an experience for your consumption and enjoyment, and the lore and the endings and the blah blah blah. I'm sure you know there's some interesting stuff that'll you know. That'll come up, but it's the knowledge and the experience of having improved, right? That I don't even I wonder how much this is like intentional and how much of it is, you know, great artists often are not entirely conscious of like what exactly it is they're doing, because he creates these just intensely gloomy, dark, depressing places, sometimes bright and radiant. Anne Orlando is visually stunning and quite bright until you shatter the illusion, if you know that that's even a thing that you can do. But yeah, these kind of empty, fallen worlds, mostly empty, mostly barren, fallen worlds. And if there's a, you know, ray of hope, it's not in the world itself. It's in the knowledge and the experience that's gained by the player, that self-mastery, that improvement, in this kind of, you know, ice cold, like, these are the rules, now have fun. you know, and if you want to go help other people beat the world, you can do that. If you want to hurt other people trying to beat the world, you can do that. If you just want to fight just because you want to fight, you can do that. It's a very interesting kind of, just conceptually interesting at all sorts of levels.
Yeah, I will say the world's not super empty. The open world.
This is less empty than most previous titles. As you said, you were saying there's a lot of NPCs, but yeah, way more than most other titles in the series or similar games.
There's like non-hostile animals, NPCs. Like,
yeah, there's like you could like harvest bunny rabbits and shit for their meat or whatever. It's like, all right.
You can kill like bald eagles.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, they've got a little bit of Red Dead or whatever going in there too.
Although I think they're supposed to have crafting materials, and I really, the crafting thing seems like it's just it's underdeveloped and
undercooked. Yes, kind of bolted on because people expect it to be there.
Yeah, was it in previous games?
Except I didn't even expect it to be there. No, it wasn't, or at least not in, you know, I mean, you have a kind of Bloodborne had it kind of, but it was almost more like smithing as an extension of the smithing thing. And it wasn't like you're farming crafting materials from mobs. It's like, it wasn't how that worked. So, I mean, kind of, but anyway, very different and not at all in that model.
The thing is also, it does incentivize you like killing every little animal, every little bunny rabbit you see, because you would get XP for it. Like,
but they look cute. They're harmless, and I don't give a shit about what I need. I mean, I don't need it that much, and I'm not gonna like murder all these bunnies.
It depends where I'm at. Like, you know, how close am I to not?
You're just killing them just to kill them just to get the shit you may need, but you're never actually gonna use.
What if I'm, shame. If I have 500 points or runes short of an upgrade, I'm gonna go.
Yeah. All right. That's a little different. Sure.
Also, if there's like a cattle, like the. You can get pretty decent, like the thin bones. They can that's when like you can you actually, when you're fighting like the wolves and like the shitty mob, like the shitty hostile predators, you can actually use like some of the dumb like ranged weapons that are very weak that you can't use on real enemies, and you kind of explore systems in that way, like the throwing darts.
Oh, I never even thought of that, but yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because you would never throwing daggers just terrible, but yeah, against bunnies they'd be great.
Yeah.
I did want to say though, I lost my train of thought earlier in the episode, but now I'm remembering it, and it connects to this issue with the runes and the, because you mentioned like being 500 runes off. That's what the pocket rune items are for. And yes. you click, pick up a bunch of those. And that's what I wanted to say is, like, if you buy, like, you'll get equivalent-ish amount of runes, especially once you account for the death tax of, like, if the mooks kill you, you may or may not be able to get your stuff back. And often if it's, you know, if it's just often you won't. Like, you can't bank. And I think they even have a tax on top of that. In Dark Souls and Bloodborne, it was you got all of your runes, your drop runes back, as I recall. Definitely in Dark Souls. Here, I think there's, like, it's like 70% or something like that. So there's already a tax just because you died. And then you may not be able to get it at all. So when you've, I could tell you the number of times in Dark Souls especially where I was banging my head against the wall because there's not as much stealth, but you still don't necessarily absolutely have to kill every mook in order to progress. Elden Ring really lets you progress meaningfully, get to new areas and still level up, which you already kind of don't have to because the game is very, very playable at a low level or, level one prisoner or whatever. Like, it's totally, totally doable. Or not, maybe you don't want to go that extreme, but you don't have to go, but you can definitely advance and do well. And that's the thing is, like, if you're not fighting all the time, you can explore, and there's been multiple bigger and smaller treasure chests. One in particular was huge, and maybe people know, is there's like a, if you go a little off the beaten path, you can find a grave site with a bunch of tombs that have a bunch of runes in it, like thousands and thousands of runes, which that was worth, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 levels worth of runes within the first couple hours just for, exploring off the beaten path and not trying to slam right into the armored column at the gate. So yeah, I was saying this also in our just before the show, how, as I recall, like the best attempt at the similar kind of thing that I've experienced previously would be Deus Ex, which was, we'll have to do it. People have been asked, and obviously we will do an episode. Another one that probably would benefit from being replayed, although I think I could do that one without. In any case, Deus Ex on paper let you try different approaches, and that was true to an extent. But in practice, you pretty much always had to murder everyone in the area to get enough experience to be competitive in the next area. You would get a little, exploratory bonuses here and there. But often, if you put experience points into swimming in order to swim to an area that would unlock you less experience than you lost by putting points into swimming instead of guns, right? This is just not at all, for a variety of reasons, it's interesting that it really is giving you at least the illusion, but it feels like, it's very open. At a minimum, it's open in the sense of, you can go lots of places and see lots of things, and you don't have to have, special equipment that only is gated by a certain number of hours of progress in order to do that. Not at all. Which is refreshing and cool. And that's, I guess, ultimately where I was going with this is in terms of I always think of Ender's Game. You remember the game that Ender, do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. The game that Ender was playing?
Giant's Drink, whatever it was.
Whatever it was called. Yeah. Where it's basically the kind of, it's a science fiction thing, but it's like the archetypal game. It's a world where you could basically go and kind of do anything. You have to kind of put in the hours and but the game is essentially developed, it's not really clear. It doesn't matter. It's science fiction, but the idea is it's generating itself in such a way that you can continue to interact with it. And that's ultimately how Ender makes contact with the alien queen and blah, blah, blah. But she's like sending him messages through the game, which is like responding to his dreams and stuff. So obviously it's not that, but it feels like the most significant step that I've personally yet experienced on the road to that kind of I don't know how to think about it even, but if one side of the spectrum is a kind of purely mechanical, a Twitch challenge like Galaga or Pong, where electronic video games kind of had their origins as an art form, which arguably weren't even really art capable. It's just a different kind of a thing at that point. Here we have something that is, it's just a very intricately put together, but also sprawling and within certain limit. I mean, you know, okay, there's certain kind of, you know, it's not a bunny hugging simulator or something, but in terms of giving you the player a world to explore, it accomplishes what like Assassin's Creed kind of almost got in certain ways, and Far Cry kind of almost got in certain ways. All these kind of so-called open world games, like this is to me is the first one that really feels like a world.
I've never really been too critical of open world games. I generally find they get feel. It's not like I've ever since what was it? I think Red Dead. There's like open worlds have been felt lived in. I think this one is that it's the first open world game with like stakes and stress. Like open world games are kind of it's just utterly stressless. And Far Cry, you can get killed a million times and fall off stuff. It doesn't matter. In this one, when you're exploring and you die, it's like it's the end of the world. It's like, you know, it's a crisis.
Yeah, it sucks, and you gotta kind of right, and especially, you know, the kind of more you go through the game, the more the distance between levels, in particular, or items that you actually want, increases to thousands of runes. It's, you know, even losing 1,000, 2,000 becomes quite a setback. And
I've started saving, like, you know, like you told me, like the rune items that you save. I've just stopped touching them because I know I'm gonna need them late game. Like, or when the levels,
well, at that point, the smaller ones in particular are like, because the distance between levels is so huge.
You get them pretty quick though. Like,
yes, no, and you get them for but yeah, well, whatever. My approach has just been like to use them typically for like that little bit extra, but starting from early on and save the big, like, never use more than I can, than I'm gonna need. Never like acquire more by that method than I'm gonna need immediately. It's almost like cash, right? Or whatever you want it. Like, it's like you're liquidating the rune. I don't know. Some kind of funny microeconomic metaphor.
It's like
there.
A savings bond or a
right? Like, yeah.
Education bond, or you know, call it. Yeah. No, it's very interesting. The death. That's the only punishment for death is losing XP. There's no like. It's a lot less complicated than like the Demon Souls.
Well, no, except for, as we were talking about earlier, like any consumables you used on that run are gone.
Yeah, but they're gone when you use them, you know? Like, as soon as I fire that grenade, I know it's gone. And I'm just mad I threw it because it's not going to do shit anyway. Like.
Yeah.
The only enemy that grenades ever worked on are the eagles that are running around with, that are, have barrels of gunpowder strapped.
One-shotted by my pyro ball. I was like, yes, I made the right choice.
Yeah. I want to look at the magic system. I want to look at... I wonder how forced I am going to be into the warrior class. Because I do want to shoot fireballs and stuff. And I do want to look at katanas. But or fire arrows.
Yeah, on the thing about the magic system, like, I think it's one of those things that you really need to be high level to really enjoy, like, going through low level experiences. A low level magic specialist is just not going to be very fun unless you're really into that particular experience, because you can just respec and get the shit you need, and you know what I mean. It's one of those things, especially on a second playthrough. So
true. Like, you could just, in theory, I could just, if I ever find the fireball thing, I could just.
It was cheap. It was like 800 runes, and then I had to spend 2 levels to get from 8 to 10 faith to use it, and it's extremely effective at minimum level. So
you could buy it. Interesting. Wow, so maybe it's very different. I've never seen magic in a store yet.
Have you been to the round table?
Yes.
I got to talk to people in the round table, man. You got to talk to these people there to help you out with all kinds of shit.
Maybe. I went there. I didn't have many runes when I first went there, and I never came back.
I had been saving that treasure trove for when I was like, I'm not going to level up for the first couple levels until I knew, like, the difference between level 1 and level 5 just wasn't going to matter. So rather than spend those runes now, I would just, you know, keep what I can, and acquire these items, and then it's the first opportunity, which was that, I was like, oh shit, here's some stuff I actually
want.
Can we
talk about how they stress you the fuck out for that first, like, five, or not five, like, first hour or two, because you can't level up, you just get runes and you know their XP.
Well,
and
he's
just, and it's opaque that you have to go to,
I agree.
To start it's, leveling up.
Right.
It's, I mean, it's great. That's really good design, but I was so pissed. Like, I was like, I knew what they were doing. And I was so mad at it. Like, you have to explore a very dangerous open world.
And you don't have anywhere to spend your money that, like, you're, is like, yeah. Yep. It's, I think in some ways that's the kind of defining, that's the experience that, that encapsulates most, like, what the thing is actually about at a certain level. And it's interesting to me that Dark Souls didn't really have that, because it let you level up from the start. So he did that in Bloodborne. I wasn't mad. I was confused. I got a little mad because I actually struggled in that first, which a lot of people did in the that first stretch, because you should be grateful. He gives you a lot of safe spaces in that time period. Bloodborne has one giant area you got to traverse before you get to the first lantern that lets you level up, and it's a bitch. It really is, like, it's. And I had beaten Dark Souls and spent about 50 plus, I don't know, more. I'd have to double check. But, I got okay at Dark Souls, and it still took me a minute to sort that out in Bloodborne. And then when I saw it here, I was like, oh, I know what he's doing. And I just, again, I took it as validation for my thesis of, I'm not going to sweat about levels, especially not for now. Like, I'm going to go for cool move sets and things that I find aesthetically pleasing, and if it's, you know, if the experience is okay in terms of, you know, my ability to kill mooks, then great. Otherwise, if I have to, but so far I haven't. I'm just now starting to get to a point where I was like, okay, maybe I'm gonna go explore some of those other roads and see if I can't find some cool shit to make my samurai sword, be sharper or whatever.
Yeah, I got lucky. I stumbled upon, like, a straight up better version of my sword, of my one handed big one handed sword.
Mm.
I mean, it's like a hand and a half sword, I guess you'd call it if you're a weaponsburg or a bastard sword.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know bastard swords from other games.
Yeah, just longer than a two handed, not as long as a two handed sword.
Not a great sword, but yeah.
But it's,
I always like those.
I was called a lord's sword, which is like just that with better stats. And I did end up putting like +2 or +3 into it, and it's funny how it didn't really. It also doesn't really feel like it makes a difference, like. I spent items at the, you know, blacksmith to make it this thing +3, and it doesn't feel meaningfully different, which I guess is...
No, that's exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could, you know, the game is playable at minimum level. Yeah. It's not, you know, you do, you know, it's, most players are definitely going to want to not do that because you're not speedrunners. You know, I feel like speedrunners are the feet in the Stone Toss comic of, like, I don't know, narrative enjoyers, and
we need to do this episode. I am a speedrunner appreciator.
Okay, all right.
If not an enjoyer myself.
Oh God, no! I mean, I could never. You appreciate? All right. Well, we could talk about speed. I think it's enough of a phenomenon. It's like, which, a crossover.
That's also generational too, I bet.
Probably.
As a Zoomer, I'm a big fan of the speedrunners. But okay. So my last big point that I want to get you, kind of question you on, is, so, can I say my background? So my background with games, I have very good time preference in terms of purchasing video game products. I very rarely, maybe like less than every 2 years, I'll buy a game new. This year I've bought two new games because we do this show. Ironically, it's damaged that time preference. But I'll usually spend like $10 to $15 max on a game, usually less than 10, because I buy it like 3-4 years after it was new, or it's a small indie game, I'll just buy it. So I've really bounced off most of these games. I've played a little Bloodborne, played for like 2 hours, like whatever. I bounced off 2 and 3. I only ever played 1. Never played Demon's Souls. I really wanted to play Ghost of Tsushima, but never got an opportunity.
That wasn't from, was it?
Sekiro.
Oh, Sekiro. You said Ghost of Tsushima.
It's not the same game.
No.
Retarded?
No, they're not the same game.
Am I mixing up, like...
I thought you were... No, yeah, no. Sekiro
and
Ghost...
I'm mixing up Sekiro. When I say that, I mean Sekiro.
Sekiro, gotcha. Okay.
Are they not the same thing?
No.
Really? Am I...
100% not the same.
This is like a. This, I just want to say
Ghost of Tsushima is like kind of like it's a better Uncharted.
Really?
Yeah. From what I understand, I haven't played. As I said, I haven't played. I know it was popular.
That's the most racist thing I've ever done. Yeah. No. Sucker Punch. How did I mix these up? I guess aesthetically they're similar.
Okay, that's not fair. Actually, there's no visible waypoints, and I will have to clearly have to actually play Ghost of Tsushima. I don't want to.
I remember it being considered a very hard game, but
probably was.
But I never played it myself. But anyway, my brother got really into it, and I assumed that.
But I'm sure it's similar enough. Anyway, to your point though, to your question, because I mean, honestly, like in terms of your question, because especially since I haven't played either, I'm.
So like, anyway, I bounced off all the From games, and this one is the first one I haven't. And I'm pretty sure it's because I bought a new TV and paid full price for it that I've been forced to invest. I think had I played this game, I probably would have bounced off of it if I bought it for like $5. But I think is the first
I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, there's a feeling of like, God, I paid full price. I gotta, you know.
And I'm not really like, quote unquote, like when I play Far Cry, I'm like ear to ear grin. I love me some Far Cry.
Okay.
This game is not got the same like.
Not doesn't do that for you. Okay, it's for me. It's reversed.
I'm not pulled to this game. I'm playing this game. I'm playing this game as like the way you watch Citizen Kane. Or make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And if that matters to you, like what do you call ego enjoyment or id enjoyment? Just maybe wait or don't play. Like it, I am playing this game at a certain level of like me paying a lot of money for this game. I bought a whole new rabbi for this.
Well, and also you're like, you know, providing a service. People want to know, and it's, you know, it's interesting that you can. It's almost like we have become the games journalists now, but like in the truest sense, right? Of I mean, I guess we're paying instead of getting paid. We'll have to set up some crypto wallets or something for people who want to help out. Anyway. I don't think like that really changes the experience too much in the sense of like, okay, here we have this video game that's an important cultural object and an important video game object, and you know, how are we gonna study it? And yeah, at a certain point, it is kind of work, right? At least, you know, I think for me, it's like I just really enjoy these games. It really does hit a certain kind of itch, and yeah, maybe Far Cry is I don't know. I could, you know, Far Cry is much more of a kind of military oriented thing, right? Than this is kind of. I mean, yeah, there's obviously combat is the heart of it, but it's not really a fighting game in that kind of way, and it's certainly not a you know, military infiltration simulator or something.
Yeah, I'm just still freaking out that I made the Sekiro. I thought it was Sekiro. Ghost of Tsushima was the game in that game. I'm still.
Shadows never die, as I recall. Was there something? Yeah, Shadows die twice.
Yeah,
whatever. But, same thing. I mean, I'm sure there's some lore reason why.
Yeah. What is it? Ghost of Tsushima. I literally thought it was Sekiro Ghost of Tsushima. I'm not. This is a. I really wanted to play both those games. I think they became. Also to point out, so Ghost of Tsushima was just like kind of a half-ass FromSoft game, sold like 8 million copies, whereas Sekiro sold like 4.
Right, which just goes to show you, I'm sure, like, yeah. So, well, it was also, yeah, I mean, Ghost of Tsushima, as I recall, was like, it was basically From Software for a PlayStation audience that does not own a gaming PC and probably hasn't played any FromSoft games, but they want to do, like, I guess that's probably where they got the idea to say, hey, look, this did so well. But you got to imagine the Sekiro guys were pissed. Like, I would be.
Well, Sekiro came out first, so how mad could you be?
Sure, sure.
Like, You got your shot at it, and they got their shot at it. Like, it wasn't like they had Samurai Dark Souls come out before FromSoft Samurai Dark Souls. I could see being but yeah. Also, I think Ghost was PS PlayStation exclusive. So, and it still sold better, which is crazy. Actually, kind of that Ghost of Tsushima sold almost twice the copies and was a console exclusive on like. PS4. It's wild. I really do want to play
Sekiro
or we should do, you know, if we do one of the Ghost or Ghost of Tsushima, one of the, I bet they're both, they both look really fun actually. So
I mean again it's like hours question at a certain point.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree. I would like to play both. So and I'm sure, you know, I will once I want to do From Software stuff again. Yeah.
Well, so, I have this fantasy that the video, like, the we'll have a recession and the games industry will just stop for a while and everybody can catch up on their stuff.
That would be nice. Yeah. Anyway, on that note, that's probably a good time to go. So hope everybody enjoyed, and I guess we
part two in a month, I guess, probably, or I don't know how long, but there will be a part
two. Maybe we'll have more. I was about to say, like, I don't want to start talking about lore now, and I didn't sleep with the whore. I'm not going to sleep with the whore. I'm not an incel. I'm a volcel, and I heard her name come up in the introduction, and I'm like, nah, you're bad news. This is no good can come of this.
So I do appreciate there's as someone who follows the Twitter of Elden Ring, there's a pretty serious debuff for doing that, which is like it goes away, but so does the buff. So it's a very mechanical thing. I think it's like a
fascinating. All right, okay. Well, I'm still not doing it. So
you get, I think it's you take 25% health loss.
I don't want to. Thank you for telling me, but no more spoiler.
Yeah.
There's a reason why I don't know. It's because I chose not to know.
I didn't do it either because it did feel also like, you know,
it's a setup, and that's interesting. So yeah, but we'll get more into the lore. I think I'm okay. I mean, depending on how long it takes and how I feel about it, we could even do a three parter. I don't care. I was looking over today.
No, I'm enjoying it like I enjoy Citizen Kane. You know.
Yeah. So like fucking, we'll take our time. I don't give a shit. All right. So with that, hope everybody enjoyed, and we'll catch you later.
Turn off tune out before you lose it.